bases aside from Halifax on the east coast of any note, any naval bases?
Oh yes, there was a base at Shelburne on the further south than Halifax. Then there was a base at Newfoundland, of course, and another one at Sydney. But they weren't, they had nothing to do with personnel.
Mm-hmm.
All the training of personnel was done in Halifax, and the drafting, which became a very large operation, eventually leading to the establishment of a base all on its own, HMCS Peregrine.
Mm-hmm.
And Stadacona became kind of a manning depot where we kept the men and sent them off to their ships as directed by Peregrine.
Mm-hmm. This is again sort of off base, but there were other stations across Canada in the prairies and in Toronto too, I think.
Yes.
How many and where would they be?
I later, my last job in the Navy for 5 years, I commanded them all.
Did you?
Yes. There were 22 naval divisions across Canada.
Mm-hmm.
There was one at Prince Rupert, one at Vancouver, one at Victoria, one at Edmonton, Calgary, Regina, North Bay, which is now called Thunder Bay, Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, Kingston, Halifax, and St. John, New Brunswick. That should add up to 22.
Mm-hmm. And this was how many there were before the war started?
No, there were fewer than that. Some were started later.
Mm-hmm.
But they did all the recruiting and very basic training. At least a sailor knew how to salute by the time he arrived down, but that's about all he knew,
yeah.
Marching and so on. And we took them absolutely green and shoved them through the schools, which originally at the outbreak of war, they were most inadequate.
Mm-hmm. But it was a start.
We sent men to sea knowing full well that they weren't capable of doing what they were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they learned their lessons at sea.
Mm-hmm.
As much as they did, yes. But I think that this was a terrible shame, sending ships to sea with untrained personnel.
Mm-hmm.
I know of one ship, perhaps I shouldn't say this, but one ship went to sea when the captain became very violently ill, and he was the only man on the ship that knew anything about navigation. And the ship made us a message and turned 180 degrees to come home.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to send a lot of ships out to form a kind of a basket to catch him in,
yeah.
Bring him in before he hit the coast.
Hard to believe, isn't it? What period of the war would this have been in? Very early?
In the very early part of the war.
Yeah.
We suffered a lot of pains and aches due to lack of real good
experienced officers
and men, but being at sea all the time, they gained experience very rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
Far more rapidly than they would do in peacetime when you spend so much time.
Well, it's a case of sink or swim, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And by 1943, we had a Navy to be proud of.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to learn the hard way.
Yeah. It was probably the case with most navies that were expanding at that rate, even though the British Navy had a lot of officers to fall back upon, didn't they?
Yes.
They could expand within themselves much better.
Well, nobody in the world ever experienced such an expansion as we did.
Mm-hmm.
We started out with 1,700 officers and men, and we lost a couple of destroyers who were full of the experienced men. I suppose we lost 35% to 40% of our 1,700 casualties.
Mm-hmm.
And with the remainder, we expanded to 95,000.
Yeah, that's astounding growth.
It has to be known to be, has to be seen to be believed.
Mm-hmm. No one can just imagine. And it was a navy of all sorts of different, able to fulfill different functions as well, wasn't it? You had cruisers, you had destroyers, you had a couple small aircraft carriers.
Eventually,
mm-hmm.
we manned with Canadian troops the two small aircraft carriers, the Puncher and the Nabob. And that was just using up part of the 95,000. They were very good.
They had trouble with the Nabob, though, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, she got torpedoed.
Yeah. But it was full of teething troubles, the early part of the Nabob. I think they picked it up in Scotland, and they had all sorts of troubles with it.
I hadn't heard that. I served with the Puncher out of Scapa Flow
mm-hmm.
When I was in Iroquois at the end of the war. And Puncher and a lot of British ones. We used to go and bomb the hell out of Norwegian stations, radio stations, and then turn back and race for home. But they were pretty big fleets.
Were they ever used for the function that they were designed for? Like, I think they were designed for convoy escorting, weren't they?
No, not these.
Not Puncher and Nabob?
No, not Puncher and Nabob. They were designed for fleet work, and they were engaged in fleet work.
Did they?
We had quite a few of these ships that were built in Canada or United States come with the convoys, and they flew off those. It was a great deal, very satisfactory to have them with us, because they would extend our vision a long way.
Much, yeah.
And we tried the bombers. Bombers would come over a convoy and say, "I'm to give you 13 hours of protection."
Mm-hmm.
And he would say, "What's your ceiling?" And we'd always make it a bit higher than it was in order to get them down.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't come down through unless the ceiling was very high. And I remember one aircraft came out and said he was to give me 12 hours protection. And within half an hour he said, "I can't get down, I can't see anything, I go." In 3 hours he was in bed in Newfoundland, and we only had 9 days to go.
Let me get you back to the late 30s. You were on Skeena for a couple of years as a navigation officer.
Yes.
What happened after that?
After Skeena, I went back to England to specialize in physical training.
Mm-hmm. And what was physical training?
Well, there was a 9-month course in a gymnasium.
It was PT work.
PT work, yes. And we called them PNRTs, physical and recreational training officers.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that course, and then I went as squadron physical training officer for the Home Fleet Destroyers. We had 27 destroyers to look after and one cruiser. I was born in the cruiser Cairo, and I had organized the games and sports, everything for 27 destroyers. Big job.
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah, we'd meet the combined fleets, you know, we'd have as many as 75 ships, battle cruisers, aircraft carriers. So, and then everybody was playing games. Soccer, tug of war, boxing, you name it, and we did it. So I was a very busy man for
allocating fields, allocating equipment, I guess.
Yes. And organizing the destroyers in competition.
Mm-hmm.
27 destroyers. It takes a lot of organizing for the...
Well, 27 separate teams, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be a champion, so you had to rig it for championship
tournaments and whatnot. How long did you do that?
I did that for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back and was sent back to Halifax, where I became an officer of the in the Stadacona. Mm-hmm. And
this will be 1937.
1936, I think. 36. And that only lasted for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. When I was sent as first lieutenant to the Champlain, sister ship to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And I did that job for a year and a half.
Was she the exact same as the Vancouver? She
yes,
was a sister ship.
Sister ship, yes.
She was nearing the end of her tether, I think, too. She
oh,
was
very late. Much so. Yeah, we had some awful experiences on that, trying to maintain, keep the rust away, and we'd chip the side, and chipping hammer would go right up to the side, and we'd have to put a patch on it.
No one saw or noticed.
Yeah, they weren't, I suppose they were safe to go to sea in, but I always had my doubts about it. Mm-hmm. Especially the Champlain, which hadn't been maintained as well as the Vancouver.
Why was that?
Weather.
East Coast weather.
East Coast weather, yes. And you get so much weather where there where you can't work outside.
So maintenance is neglected.
Maintenance gets neglected. Well, the ships just deteriorate. Mm-hmm. And the Vancouver enjoyed good weather and was immaculate, always a beautiful ship. Mm-hmm. And Champlain was a struggle.
Mm-hmm. Can that be attributed to any officers or just conditions that they had?
Oh, just conditions. No, I don't think that the quality of officers had anything to do with it at all.
Okay, you were with Champlain. Well, take me up to the war, up to 1939. What happened after the Champlain?
After Champlain, I have to rack my brains. After Champlain, I was sent to England to get as first lieutenant mm-hmm. of the St. Lawrence, Saint-Laurent, mm-hmm. commonly known as the Sally.
Was she an ex-British ship?
Ex-British. We took over two, the Fraser and the Saint-Laurent. And the Saint-Laurent was due to go to Halifax, and the other one for this, Fraser for this coast. Mm-hmm. And I served for 2 years in the Sally as first lieutenant. Then they wanted to have ships of the same class together. Mm-hmm. So the Skeena was to go to Halifax and the Saint-Laurent was to come here. So we came and here to Victoria, Esquimalt, and we changed crews with the exception of myself. I was the only man left on board the Saint-Laurent and I stayed here.
Why were you the only one?
Because they wanted me to serve for a time on the West Coast, where I hadn't been since...
late 20s.
Yes. Since the Skeena.
Skeena
in 31, 32. So, I finished my 2 years in the Saint-Laurent, and then war broke out. Mm-hmm. 39.
Okay, well, let's talk about some other things. I want to ask a few general questions before we get to that. How did the Depression, in your eyes, affect the Navy? Like, what sort of limitations did it impose upon you? What couldn't you do that you could have done before?
Well, we were curtailed in the amount of oil fuel we could buy. Mm-hmm. And,
cut down sailing time.
When we were in England, the rate of exchange was against us.
Yeah.
The pound went up to 5.15 and we had to pay it. I remember my wife and I lived on $90 a month. It was all the money after I paid my expenses. Mm-hmm. That was all the money we had. It's pretty grim.
But didn't the RCN, didn't you get paid more in the RCN than they did in the Royal Navy?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. But the Englishmen have a happy faculty of getting money from somewhere. So they all lived.
Well, the Royal Navy was the prestige service, wasn't it? So I guess there were a lot of people with private incomes.
Yes, that's true. Yes.
Admiral Hibbert relates a story about how he was sailing south, and it was during the Depression, and this was just before the El Salvador thing, I think, that they wanted to go through the Panama Canal, but the Canadian government wouldn't give them the money to do so.
That's true, I was there.
Were you?
Yeah.
That is so hard to believe.
Yes, we arrived in Panama. And we were due to transit the canal the next day. And we suddenly got a message from Ottawa to hold everything. And so we stayed there, I think, about 16, 17 days, waiting for Parliament to argue this thing out. But some member of the opposition came up and objected to this enormous expenditure of money across the canal.
Do you have any idea how much the enormous expenditure was?
I'm not sure, but I don't imagine it would exceed 2,000.
They probably wasted more money in having you people at dock or at moored at Panama than it would have cost to go through.
That's probably true, but...
But did you encounter anything else much like that on account of the... you mentioned the fuel oil and exchange rates.
No, I don't think there was anything else that I can think of that... I know when we went fishing, the captain said wanted to use a service boat for fishing and recreation, and the captain said we'll buy our own gasoline. And I doubt whether we ever did that, but I know he threatened it.
I guess he had to... Well, tell me, being in the Navy, on board ship, living as you were sort of isolated from the rest of the community, weren't you? So you weren't really, you didn't get the full brunt of the Depression much as the people in Victoria would have gotten.
Yes, that is true, except that we all had families.
That's true. If you were married, your wife would have been on shore.
Yes, but we always had enough to scrape by. I can remember two gentlemen who were in business, who I knew very well, came down to see me in Vancouver one time, came down to spend the evening with me. And they said, "You're mad to stay here for $150 a month. You make more money ashore in the streets of Victoria selling bonds and stocks and so on." This was prior to the crash. The same two arrived after the crash with patched clothing and so on and said, "You mean to say you get $150 every month?" And I said, "Yes, this is true." So we felt very secure and very happy with our situation.
I don't blame you at all.
But
well, when did you marry?
I married on the 12th of August, 50 years ago. 1933.
So it'll be a happy 50th in the next...
Yes, on the 12th of August.
Well, congratulations now a few months ahead of time.
Thank you very much. My daughters claim they're going to throw a party. Perhaps they'll ask you.
I like that very much. Well, tell me, what was it like for your wife to be married to a naval officer during the Depression, and I suppose living just outside the naval bases, because there wouldn't be quarters for her. There weren't such a thing as married quarters.
No, no married quarters.
Were you given an allowance, a living allowance?
No.
Didn't think so. No. You'd have to live out of your own.
We had to live out of our own pocket. As I say, when we were in England, as soon as we were married, we took off for England in 1933. And we lived on $90 a month.
Comfortably? Are you okay?
Well, we took a little apartment which was 43 steps up, which we had to climb, And if we wanted anything to drink, all we had was a bottle with a screw top. Mm-hmm. And I'd take it across to the local pub, and for a couple of pennies, he'd fill it with beer, and I'd screw the top in. And it stood in the corner of a room. There was no refrigeration or anything like that.
Well, the English like their beer at room temperature anyways.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we never knew the difference.
Yeah.
But my wife came through it very happily. And she traveled a lot. I sent her out from England. But she went to Antwerp and joined a passenger ship, or semi-cargo passenger ship. I think she carried 12 passengers. And she came back to Victoria through the Panama Canal. Total cost $9 a day. That was total cost.
Well, how many days did it take?
Well, it took 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And at $9 a day, and today the same accommodation is going for 200.
A day?
200 a day.
Yeah, that's probably, yeah, it's quite a difference, isn't it?
Yes.
It certainly is. What about, would she have to sort of follow you about, what was it like for her? Did she have a job herself?
No.
So when you were away on a cruise down to the south, what would she do? Would she be with her other naval wives? Would they?
Yes, to a certain extent, although they were coming and going all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she made friends with people, and she would be invited to go and stay with people, but it's a pretty lonely life.
That's what it was,
especially for a young girl.
Yeah.
She was only 23.
How soon did children come?
5 years later, we had a child.
Yeah.
It was now 45. And then we had another one 5 years after that. And she lives over here. She's now 40.
Do you still call her a child? Do you still think of her as a little girl?
Oh, without them, we don't know what we'd be doing.
Yeah. Do you have grandkids?
Yes, we have 5 grandchildren. We had 6, but we lost one.
What happened?
Cancer.
How?
Born with cancer.
Born with cancer.
Died at 9 months.
There's nothing more painful for a mother than to lose a child that young.
Oh, dreadful. Dreadful. Yeah, we're a very staid and happy family now.
Are you lucky?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was very lucky in my career, you know, to come in late, get a late start.
Mm-hmm.
See, I spent 5.5 years outside of the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And then to come back and try and pick it all up, I can only be grateful to those people in the RN where I served. I served in HMS Calypso in the Mediterranean for 2 years after I qualified at Greenwich. And that was an experience without parallel. I served with very fine officers, 3 of whom became admirals.
Any that I would know?
Admiral Sir John Cuthbert was our gunnery officer. Captain N.A. Woodhouse, who was killed as the commodore of a convoy, who's Scruffy O'Brien's father-in-law. You know,
I've heard of him, yes.
O'Brien. It was a great experience indeed.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it was really I know you're going to say yes, a good experience to have this exchange program for Canadian sailors to Canadian officers to serve with the British?
Yes, I do. I think it was without parallel, but nowadays I think things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that whether they like it or not, the Canadian Navy must be devoted to one particular form of warfare, and that's anti-submarine. And had we I don't know what goes on nowadays, but I imagine that they are with submarines training in anti-submarine work.
They are on the East Coast because there are no submarines on the West Coast.
Yeah, but they... I don't know whether they borrow them from the U.S. Navy in their exercise periods or not.
Occasionally they do, yeah.
Yes.
We used to have one, the old Rainbow, which used to be the Grills.
Yes.
Which they gave back to the Americans.
Yes.
Which was an old World War II diesel, I think.
That's right.
Yeah.
But,
I suppose also that our allegiances, to some extent, have changed. We're closer to the Americans now, I should think, in terms of naval matters, than we are to the British.
Yes. I really don't know how they're competing with this unification.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me the Navy lost an awful lot in the way of tradition and performance.
An identity. They no longer have that identity.
That's right. No longer does the white ensign fly over the... I think, personally, I think it was a pity, but I've never been vocal about it for the simple reason I said it's up to the young men who are now serving whether they like it or not.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that they don't. They want to be identified as sailors when they go ashore. And
but they don't seem to want to make the change, though. For example, he's been in the Navy for 13 years, he came in just after unification. And whereas he would like it back as it was, I don't think they're prepared to want to make the change or to be vocal about it. You know?
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
They're too complacent, I think.
We had a representation from the lower deck, as we call it, come to a meeting when we at Royal Roads.
Mm-hmm.
We had lectures and so on and on. Forgotten what they called it. And this group of seamen got up and said just this: we are not identifiable when we're ashore. We look like soldiers. And the padre got up and said that he was watching with some pride as the destroyer came in. And he said, I was waiting for the sailors to arrive on the upper deck to make her fast. And he said, nobody arrived but a bunch of meter readers.
This was that, I know what you're talking about. A fellow by the name of Bolton wrote a book on it.
Yes.
On the Royal Canadian Navy in retrospect is what it was called.
Yes, that's right.
Seminars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The RCN in retrospect, that was it.
Yeah.
I've not bought the book yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't seen it just from the university. You could probably get it from our local library here.
Could you?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes. I must try.
Yeah.
There's another book that's coming out written by H.N. Lay.
Mm-hmm.
Who was with me in Skeena, commanded the rescue ship at the beginning of the war. And he's written a book called Memoirs of a Mariner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to get it. I've had it on order for God knows how long and haven't seen it yet. But he was a term ahead of me at Naval College.
Should be interesting. Yeah. It probably hasn't been published yet, I
guess. Oh, yes, it has been.
Has it?
Yeah, I know somebody who read it.
Mm-hmm. It's odd that you haven't been able to get it yet.
Yes,
Well, sir, I think that I pretty much picked your brains from all that I want.
Yeah.
So why don't I turn that off? And thank you very much. I do appreciate
it. You're
not
going to cover any later things.
No, my main interest is... just before the beginning of the war.
Yes.
Is there anything else you would like to tell me then, perhaps, about life in the Navy during that period? I'm thinking specifically when you were serving in Canada.
Yes. No, I think I've just about covered it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything more I can add to that.
Okay, well, I'll turn that off then.